Welcome to episode 452 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft Entertainment Technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. Josh, it seems like I just spoke with you, but really, it's only like, 12 hours sooner than it would normally be.
Right. After our weirdo Wednesday morning recording last week. Yeah. Our schedule got a little messed up.
Well, and with the holiday, it kind of made the week seem really weird. And I was thinking, how can it be time for Entertainment 2.0 again already? And there's not a whole lot of news, but luckily we have, well, I was going to say a whole lot of feedback, not a whole lot of feedback, but we have a lot of feedback from two listeners.
Right. And there's not a great quantity of news stories, but there's some pretty big ones worth talking about. So why don't we get into that? Like you said, starting with the feedback, these were both emailed into us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. This first one, we teased this a little bit last week. It's from Robert. Robert, I'm sorry. He sent this in 3 weeks ago. It was right around E3 timeframe. And it's super long. I'm going to read his TLDR version of this, but then he's got a list of questions at the end that I think are worth addressing. So his TLDR version of his very long message, and I don't say that to criticize it. I like long messages. It's fine. He says, I was all in on Microsoft's original Xbox vision, and by that he really means the Xbox One vision, and I fear that this current pressure from the video game media and hardcore gamers, he puts that in quotes, to have them focus on more single-player narrative-driven games is just forcing them to become PlayStation 2.0. So why do you feel this is a good direction for Microsoft, and is there something I'm not seeing that makes this a worthwhile path to go down? And the rest of his message really goes into how, a little bit of how Microsoft came out in 2013 with this grand vision of what the Xbox One could be. That was a pretty big game changer. I mean, for anybody who doesn't really remember, they were talking about basically an always online, always connected experience with game sharing, game library sharing and stuff that was even more robust than what we have now. A lot of really, really cool features, and also a ton of media features that never came about, you know, and ones that they even announced later. Like they eventually said, we're going to release an over-the-air tuner and do DVR support. And they gave us a tuner and no DVR support. So, you know, things like that. And he also wanted to point out that even though he knows that I do the Story Players podcast and he actually subscribes to it, that he just doesn't care about stories in video games. And that is absolutely a perfectly valid opinion. There are lots of people who just don't care about story in video games. And frankly, a lot of video games have pretty terrible stories. So that's totally fine. I totally get that. And I don't take any offense to that. Robert, so you don't have to worry about that at all. So, and then there might be some of you that might be wondering what he meant by, why is Microsoft trying to do this PlayStation 2.0 thing? And I think what Robert is actually trying to say here is that PlayStation, and really he means the PlayStation 4, their approach has been, let's just focus on games. And in his opinion, that they're just focusing on like single player narrative driven games, the types of games I love. But I don't really disagree. So, or I don't really agree with him. So let's get into his actual questions. He says, so a quick Google search, or he says Google/Bing search, will tell you that most players, roughly 70%, don't finish even the highest rated games. So the story couldn't have been that important to them. He's right ish on the amount of people who finish games. It's low. Like a lot of people don't finish games.
I'm surprised, and
there's lots of metrics that show that. Yeah, I think he's probably being generous there with the stats. Yeah, most people don't finish games. I don't think that you can automatically say that it's because the story wasn't important though. In some cases, sure, especially games where the story isn't that great. But in some cases, yeah, maybe the game just isn't that fun. Maybe it's not fun enough for it to be a 10, 20, 30 hour game. Maybe the game is broken. You know, we see games released with bugs all the time that frustrate people into not finishing games. So there's lots of reasons why people don't finish games, including they just want to move on to other games. His next one, he says, I view games like The Last of Us and Horizon Zero Dawn like I view Oscar movies. They're great for the high art they are, but it's not what the majority of people come to the medium for. I'd take the Avengers Infinity War over any of the Best Picture winners any day. You know, when he's talking about movies, like his movie analogy is great. He's spot on. Like, I'm going to watch the Fast and the Furious movies, every single one that comes out, like as soon as it comes out. None of them will ever win Best Picture awards. But I think where his analogy starts to fall down is The Last of Us and Horizon Zero Dawn aren't really what I would call high art kinds of games. These are pretty popular games that lots and lots and lots of people played. They weren't just Game of the Year winners. They were also really, really good games that a lot of people bought. Is it as many people who bought Call of Duty? No, but it was still a tremendously high number of people who bought Horizon Zero Dawn as a great example. If you want to talk about high art type of video games, let's go crazy and talk about 1979 Revolution Black Friday. It's a game that was just about the Iranian Revolution in 1979. Like, that's high art as a video game. Doki Doki Literature Club, you could maybe toss into that, where it's like super weird and different and is definitely not going to win any. I suppose it could actually win some awards because it's so different and unique. But super well played? No, there aren't many people who even know about it, let alone played it a ton. So I'm not sure that the metaphor really works out all that well for his point there. So for number three, this is kind of a bigger topic. He says, why do Microsoft and Sony have to go down the same path? Microsoft could have stayed focused on making Xbox the center of my media entertainment life and not go off catering to the less than 10% of customers that buy these types of games. And by these types of games, he means the super narrative-driven games. There's a few problems here. First, I want to hit on this topic that he keeps coming back to with the narrative-driven thing. You have to include games like God of War is a single player game. Is it super narrative driven? The series maybe not at, you might not have defined it that way in the past, but it certainly has become that way. The latest God of War has a pretty compelling story to it. And it'll be one of the best sellers on the PlayStation 4, but it's not their only focus. And I don't think that Microsoft and Sony are necessarily going down the same path, because Microsoft is actually doing a lot of things that Sony isn't doing. Microsoft has given us Xbox Game Pass. Sony doesn't have the same sort of thing. Microsoft allows you to share your game library with one other person. Sony doesn't do that. Microsoft has done cross-platform multiplayer with PC and Switch, and have said they would do it with PlayStation if Sony would allow them, but Sony won't. So Microsoft is doing a lot of things different from Sony, just not everything different. And then the big reason why all of this, why Microsoft is kind of emulating Sony, at least in terms of focusing the Xbox on gaming, is because Sony won. Sony won this generation. Sony won this generation the very first year it started. And it's because in the first year, the consoles are super expensive. The only people who are going to drop $500 on a video game console are hardcore gamers who just want to play the best games. And Sony got the marketing out that said, you want to play games? You want them to run better? They're going to run better on the PlayStation 4. That was only marginally true. They also said It's just easier. They had that whole campaign that said, oh, you want to do game sharing on a PlayStation? Here's how you do it. And they handed a friend a game disc.
Well, know, to right. make fun and, of. And I, arguably, Microsoft kind of got themselves wrapped around a pole when they first tried to go all digital, all online, and then had to figure out a way out of that because of the outcry.
Yeah, exactly. And he made a point earlier in his message that said, because there was all of that outcry about, well, not every gamer has a great internet connection. And his argument was everybody who was going to buy a $500 Xbox probably had a really good internet connection. And that point is true, but video game consoles don't stay $500 forever. And eventually they do get picked up by people who don't have great internet connections. So that's one of the reasons why they had to backpedal on that.
Yeah. And I also think, and I know we used this as an example a while ago because Microsoft had a terrible, terrible response to this. But like men and women that are out on the front, men and women that are in our armed forces that are using consoles like this as a way of kind of letting off some steam and getting some recreation, they don't have good internet.
Right.
I mean, that's a legitimate use case for people who would be spending this kind of money or organizations that would be spending money for their folks to have these, but you can't assume they're always going to be connected.
Right. So where this starts to go with Robert's message, though, is he's also really upset about how Microsoft basically turned their back on all of the media functionality. And again, I think a big reason why Microsoft did that was because they were losing at the beginning of this generation almost, I mean, not entirely, but a big part of it was because of their huge focus on media stuff.
Yes, but. And
yes, but. And part of the reason for that is there are only so many people out there like you, Richard, and some of our listeners for sure, that are going to be willing to drop $500 on a set-top box.
I agree.
There are way more people who will drop $500 on a brand new video game console.
I agree.
They don't care about the media stuff.
Then why not promote both heavily? And what Microsoft really did seemed more like a panicked knee jerk. And they did a complete 180. Ironically, maybe they should have called this the Xbox 180.
Oh, we joked about that at the time.
That instead of having a heavy focus on video, now they were all gaming and almost exclusively gaming at the expense of all the video stuff that they had originally talked about. And I would argue that that was a bad reactionary decision.
Yeah, and I would too. So you know, on that point, I think Robert and both you and I, Richard, are basically on the same page there. That they really just screwed this up. They could have had both and been fine, probably. He also wanted to talk about the Kinect. He said the Kinect was great technology that should be putting the Amazon and Google devices to shame. And he means in terms of home assistants. But because it wasn't gaming-centric enough, it was scrapped. I don't think that's the only reason. It was also expensive. And if the Xbox is primarily a gaming device and it's not being used for gaming stuff, then there isn't much of a reason to keep pushing it because people weren't buying it. And there's no reason for them to keep making and selling product that no one is buying.
So I would argue that people weren't buying it because they stopped putting out Kinect games, right? I mean, that's one of the things that we talked about too, is that initially this was the most successful consumer electronics device in the history of consumer electronics devices. They sold millions and millions and millions of these in a very small window of time. And then when the Xbox One came out, they basically came out with very few new titles. And I don't know if they didn't provide the right incentives to these gaming houses to build Kinect-powered games or what, but you just didn't see them. And I think that was more the downfall of Kinect than it, you know, it wasn't gaming centric because developers weren't building to it.
Well, and part of the problem is timing, right? Like when the Kinect came out for the 360, it came out 3 years into the console's lifespan, at least. So at that point, the Xbox 360 had already seen price drops. It was already in tons and tons and tons of households. And people were okay spending $115 on a peripheral that made their Xbox as cool as the Wii, which was selling like hotcakes at the time. But then you go to a brand new console, generation. It's the most expensive it could be. This new piece of hardware adds $100 to the price of the box. And the only people buying video game consoles when they first come out are hardcore gamers. And that type of game doesn't suit hardcore. Like, you're not playing Call of Duty with a Kinect. You're not playing Forza with a Kinect. So the timing there just doesn't make sense. Like Kinect, man, now I can't even remember the name of it. Was it Kinect Fitness or Xbox Fitness? I think it was.
Right.
Was super awesome, but no one was going to be like, yeah, I'm totally buying a $500 Xbox One to play Kinect Sports.
So as you're saying that right now, that makes complete sense to me. Did nobody at Microsoft think of this? I mean, that's
maybe not.
That's what astounds me here. And here's the other thing. How much did people pay to get Echo devices in their homes when they first came out? Voice assistants that could play music for you or find stuff on the internet for you or, you know, do this or that. $179, I think, was the initial price for that thing.
Sure was.
This cost $100. They had an interactive voice accessory that they squandered for years. Even today, it still cannot do some of the most basic things that Cortana on a speaker or a phone or on your computer can do.
Right, exactly. Even though they had Cortana on Windows Phone at the time.
Right.
Yeah, it just didn't make any sense. All right, so his last question is, you can't on one hand make the argument that people are clamoring for new IPs instead of the same Halo, Gears, Forza formula, which are all near the top of their genres, by the way. And on the other hand, have Call of Duty or Grand Theft Auto or Minecraft outsell everything else multiple times over every single year.
Okay, before you answer, what's an IP?
Intellectual property. It's the short shorthand phrase of saying like this particular series of games. Like the Halo IP encompasses every single Halo game.
Got
and
it.
Stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you for calling that out. I think you can make that argument because there are so many gamers and so many people playing so many different things and lots of things. Like, I'll play most of the Forza games, but I also want to play these super weirdo niche games. You know, I played Forza and Doki Doki Literature Club. I played, I'll play a little bit of, I'll play a lot of Call of Duty, actually, and Hellblade. Like, there are people who will play all of these things. And to say that people don't really actually want new IP kind of goes against what we've actually seen happening. Horizon Zero Dawn was a new IP, and it sold great and was great. Anthem, new IP coming out next year. Everyone is super excited about that game. Rocket League was new IP. Everyone in the universe, it seems, plays Rocket League. Same is true with Stardew Valley or Celeste. That's a little bit less popular, but still loved by those people. How about Overwatch? That was new IP and is huge. Or Cuphead, if you want to be Microsoft specific. New IP and absolutely beloved. Inside, another great game. Like, it does make sense. People do want new IP and the old stuff that they're comfortable with because they're willing to spend money on all of it. So, yeah, I think you can make that argument. And I guess just to wrap up with all of Robert's big questions, you know, he feels that there's this big focus to just put out new single player narrative driven games. And I just don't see it because we keep seeing all of these other things like Rocket League and the new Call of Duties and all of that stuff all the time. But his other argument is that he somehow feels like this is ruining his experience in gaming. And I don't know how you can make that argument when the games that it sounds like he enjoys playing also continue to get made. I mean, if you're interested in Halo and Forza and Call of Duty and Grand Theft Auto, well, then you're going to keep getting those games. So I'm not really sure where the argument comes in that even if the bigger focus was on single player games, which I really don't think it is, that it could somehow be harming the experience that you're getting. So really great bunch of questions there. Really great conversation. And frankly, it was fun just thinking back over the last almost 5 years of Xbox One's history.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I just want to have some closing thoughts here, Robert. A lot of the discussion that we just had seems like it was counterpoint. And what I want you to take away from that is that this was really good discussion fodder. We love questions and thoughts like this. And maybe we don't all agree on that, and that's okay. It would be really interesting, I think, as a follow-up, if hearing our responses, we could get a maybe brief, slightly more brief thought on, like, where is this impacting you? If these are your concerns, do you feel like you're compromising now with the solution that Microsoft is offering, or that you're missing out on something because of this? Like, where is this impacting you? I think that would be interesting to hear. And that would probably answer Josh's question that he was wondering about. And I'm sure our listeners would want to know too, because I can't imagine you're alone on this.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. You just read through all of that. So I'll read the next one, which is from Greg. And Greg says, "Hey guys, I'm one of the gullible World Cup fans that fell for the Hisense World Cup streaming exclusive." I didn't even know about this exclusive.
I didn't know about this either.
"I picked up the 49-inch H6E set from Walmart for the ridiculously low price of $219. Wow. The set looked fantastic for the price, but it started having problems almost immediately. It couldn't run 4K apps for more than an hour or so without the set becoming unresponsive, needing to be unplugged. It would hang after a couple of hours of playing from HDMI inputs. I got the set a couple of weeks before the Cup, so I figured a software update would fix it. One came, but it didn't help. Hisense support is terrible, and after a month or so, they finally agreed that the set had a problem and would send someone out to fix it. I'm not convinced that I have a bad set. I think the processor is too underpowered, but fixing rather than replacing a set this cheap seems ridiculous." We agree.
Yeah.
"But hey, what about the exclusive 4K stream? It looked no different than the regular Fox stream. It was not HDR. This is borderline fraud in my opinion. So maybe Fubo has it, but it was supposed to be exclusive to the Hisense sets. On top of that, they barely got the sets out in time in the US. Luckily, the games look fine on my LG B7 OLED." Dude, if you have an LG B7 OLED, just use that. No, I'm sorry. I don't mean to mock. This is, this sounds terrible. Absolutely terrible. I did not know about this. I actually don't have a Walmart anywhere near me. I have to drive like half an hour or more to get. Actually, I have to drive like 40 minutes to get to a Walmart. Jeez. And that might be it. This might have been exclusive to that retailer. If I were you, if I were in your shoes, Greg, I would push to return it.
Yeah. Well, especially since he really only bought it for to be able to watch the World Cup in 4K.
Yeah.
And he doesn't need it for that anymore. Even if it would have been good, he doesn't need it for that anymore. especially since he can do it on his LG B7 OLED. So, right. Yeah, this is, I feel really, really bad for you, Greg. I seem to remember, Richard, you and I standing in the Hisense booth at CES this year multiple times and just being dumbfounded by how terrible their displays looked. At least that's how I felt, especially when they were showing soccer, which is like all they showed in their booth this year.
Yeah, so you and I disagreed on the projectors. I like the projector. You were underwhelmed by the projector. But yeah, their televisions are budget televisions in the US. These really just don't compete with an LG or a Sony or a Samsung. So $219, I hate to say this, but you're getting what you paid for. $219, how can that possibly, and I don't mean that by a slam in any means, but how can they possibly support 4K input on a device for $219? That's just insane. Take it back. Dude, take it back.
Yeah, hopefully he can. I wonder if he's just had it too long or something.
But man.
Even for store credit, like, do anything you can to get rid of that device.
Yeah, and I don't really know much about Walmart's return policy, but hopefully they have a good one that even if the return policy from, or rather the warranty isn't going to cover you here, hopefully Walmart will.
Yeah, hopefully.
Also, something to look into if you bought this on a credit card, your credit card may have a service that protects you. So that might be something to look into too.
Good point.
All right. That's it for our feedback. Thank you for the messages. They came to us at our mailbox at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com.
All right. So let's move into the news. This is actually, I felt like pretty surprising news this week. I think this was an exclusive over at Windows Central or Android Central. They're both run by the same company. Anyway, Microsoft is apparently working on a movies and TV app for both Android and iOS. And Richard, I'm going to guess that your very first response was the same as mine, and that is to ask,
why?
Why?
Why? Why?
Who wants this? Who is actually asking for this?
I don't know if they think that they need to reach a broader audience. Maybe that's why movies and TV isn't as successful as they want it to be. I don't know what they're thinking here. I know that I saw a couple people on Twitter talking about how, well, maybe it would be more useful if they just rejoined Movies Anywhere.
Yeah, that would be way more useful. And fortunately, this article says that Microsoft is planning on doing that. And like, that is the really good news in this article. But I have an Android phone. You have a bunch of iOS devices.
And if they're rejoining Movies Anywhere, then why bother with this? Because there are good apps that let you already watch on those platforms.
Well, the reason why Microsoft would bother with this is they want you to buy those movies from Microsoft, not from Google or Apple or anybody else. So that's why. I just don't think anybody will.
My only, it's not even an explanation. I don't know what I would call this. My only belief for why they might be doing this is that they're trying to reach out to their former Windows Phone users who were in the movies and TV ecosystem and don't have that anymore. Where are they now? Most of them are probably on Android, but they're on iOS and Android now.
Right. Yeah. I don't even use movies and TV on my Xbox. I use Vudu and Amazon for this sort of thing.
But we know people do. I mean, we always get people writing in saying, no, I use this. I don't want it to go away. This, if anything, is perhaps a good sign for those people that it's not going away, at least not in the shorter midterm.
Right. Which does contradict what you and I think you and I, it's definitely what I was saying last year when Microsoft announced that they were basically killing off Xbox Music. Wow, I can't even get the names right anymore because Groove. They changed the name of the music service so many times. Groove. They were basically killing off Groove on Android and iOS, and they killed off the streaming service that went with it. And I thought for sure that, you know, this really meant that Microsoft isn't going to bring movies and TV to any of those platforms, because if you can't get music to work on those other platforms, then you're definitely not going to get people to give you $30 for a movie or $7 to rent a movie.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. So this is baffling, but maybe there are some people out there that want this. And if you do, then this is good for you.
Yeah, I think that everybody on the planet who wants this listens to this podcast. And that's probably not a big enough audience to justify.
We know that's not as large an audience as Microsoft may want.
Right.
In fact, I know of an audience that was several million times larger than that they completely abandoned.
Right.
Those were Media Center users.
Yeah. Yeah. So because there's not very many things in this episode to focus on that are really good, let's just walk away from this story remembering that little bit about how they might be coming back to Movies Anywhere. Because if they do, that will be great news that we will celebrate here on this show when it actually happens.
Absolutely. That's a good thing. And I hope that will happen. I truly hope that will happen.
Yeah, for sure. All right. This isn't Microsoft news at all, but it was news that I was so happy about, so I had to put it in the show notes.
And this is here because you were a Windows Phone user and you went to Android.
Yeah, this next story. Right. It's a Spotify story. I've talked numerous times about how much I love Spotify, but there's one thing that's always driven me nuts about Spotify on my Android phone. I'm a big playlist user. I have some weird specific use cases for them. And up until basically today, I've never been able to rearrange and reorder songs inside of playlist in Android. And that's super duper frustrating for me. And now I can. So yay. Apparently you iOS users have had this ability for a long, long time.
Right.
For me, I had to go and pull out a Windows PC to be able to rearrange my playlist. It was super annoying. And now I can finally do it on my phone.
Weird. I wonder why that wasn't there. Okay.
Yeah. And the Engadget story that we linked to says that they don't even think it required an app update, that it was something they did on the server side. So why the crap did it take so long?
Well, if that's true, then it's entirely possible that the interface where you do this is web-based, and they were having some challenges getting the web code to allow you to do that on the device. I could actually see how that would be a problem and how they could in fact fix it on the back end. So,
yeah,
you know, it's good. It's good that they fixed it.
Yeah. So excited. So very excited. All right. That's it for our audio news. Let's move on to some gaming news. The day after we recorded the last episode of the podcast, Microsoft decided it would be an excellent time to roll out the July update for the Xbox One interface so that we would have to wait a week to talk about it. Thanks, guys. It's got some kind of cool stuff. If you're an Xbox Game Pass subscriber, you will be thrilled to know that they've started to enable fast start support for some titles. It's weird that the article doesn't mention which games. I don't know why they wouldn't tell us which titles support it, but this was functionality that they announced back at CES, or not CES, at E3, that will allow you to actually start playing games while they're downloading. So that's cool stuff to have. They've also, this is kind of like, I hate saying finally for things like this, but this seems like it's taken them forever. They brought groups support to the Xbox One interface when you're managing your games. So we've had pins for, I think, basically as long as the Xbox One has been around, I think. But now, pins is a group, and you can make all of your own groups of games and apps, too. Inside of those groups, you can name them whatever you want. You can put whatever games and apps you want in them. You can change the order in which the games and apps are listed. You can add those groups to your home screen, which is nice to have. I think the management interface for it is actually pretty good. And then the only thing that I was not quite so in love with is now when you press the Xbox guide button to make the sidebar thing fly in from the left and you go to apps and games, instead of it to, see Paul in the chat is just said, I don't like groups. As I'm saying this, he's saying why, and it's the same reason. When you click the button to go to games and apps from that sidebar menu, it doesn't go to the same screen that it used to go to. It pops open your list of pins inside of the sidebar, and then your other groups that you've defined show up below those, but just headings for those groups. So like the first group I made, not surprising to anybody, was racing games. So first I see all my pins, which is a ton. Like I probably kind of need to clear that up now. And then below that is just the heading for racing. So if I want to then play Project Cars 2, I have to click on racing, which then expands it to show all of the racing games, and then pick one. So it's in some ways, well, and then above all of that, there's an option to get to all games and apps, the interface that we've had for a long time. So if you just want to get to all of your games and apps, it's an extra click now. And I think all of you who have been listening for a while know that that sort of thing kind of drives me insane, that they keep making all of these tweaks to the dashboard, and some of them are good, but so many of them have made lots of common functionality, things that I do a lot, an extra click. Like the most recent one that really annoyed me was getting back to your full list of friends. They made that an extra click in the new guide too. So groups is pretty nice overall, but it does have that one little minor thing that I'm not a huge fan of. And then one other thing worth pointing out, there were a few other small things, but one that I thought was interesting to point out was that they're now doing full screen. They called this full screen broadcasting on Mixer. And when I first read that, I was like, well, what do you mean? Like when I broadcast games on Mixer, they're always the full screen. No, what they actually mean is full screen camera. Like we could podcast from our Xboxes, Richard, with just us on camera, not playing games, which is kind of neat and could be useful when you're streaming and you want to hop between games or something like that, or you just want to pause to talk to the people that are watching your stream. Here's the really, really interesting thing about this particular item in the update. They give a list of recommended cameras that they think people who are using Mixer from an Xbox One should use. Yeah, that list of recommended cameras doesn't include the Kinect.
I knew you were going to say that. That is crazy, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah.
I was just going to say the Kinect would have to zoom in on me because my sofa is a good 10 to 12 feet away from the TV, like it should be, but it's going to make for a really awkward podcasting layout.
Right.
Me on my sofa, you on your sofa, where these two tiny little heads on the split screen of our living rooms.
Right. Because Skype would do that, like track and Zoom sort of stuff.
Right.
But yeah,
right.
Mixer doesn't do anything like that. Neither do any of these other recommended webcams. But for some reason, they're all recommended and the Kinect isn't. I think it's mostly not recommended because they don't sell them any.
Right.
Yeah, they don't sell them anymore.
No, they don't
right?
sell them anymore. So, I mean, they're selling them until they're no longer available. So, they may be still available in some outlets. But so, I guess, yeah, this is interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we should do this sometime.
I think we should just do it with ourselves first, not necessarily for a show, and just see how that goes before we try and commit a whole show to it.
Right. We could do this with you playing Ori and the Blind Forest. No, maybe not.
But
okay.
But that's not full F anyway.
Well, I could be full screen. We could do Mixer co-streaming.
Oh, you could be my Ori coach.
I would be full screen, like your coach and narrator.
All right.
This could be amazing or horrible.
Really terrible.
One of the two. Yeah. All right, next story. And this is our last major gaming story, and it's not very major. Microsoft announced yet another new special edition Xbox One controller. It is called the Sport White Special Edition. This is a super weird name. What do you think of the looks of this, Richard? It's mostly white with like mint and gray accents. Do you like the color of this one?
So you're going to be surprised by this. I kind of do, but I don't understand. I don't understand the back.
Like with the like,
there's this swath of mint color on the back.
Yeah,
and then
on the
just
battery
these
cover.
Two tiny little mint accents on the front of the pad, and then along where you might, I don't know, rest your thumbs if they're not otherwise using the stick. I like the look. I don't get the back. That's my verdict.
Okay. Yeah, it's a little weird. I think it's kind of nice. It's nicer looking than I would have expected, but it's also $70. It's not $70 worth of nice. Maybe some people think it is. Maybe it's the exact perfect controller that they've always wanted. And you can't do something like this in Design Lab. So it would be cheaper than a Design Lab controller. So I guess $70 maybe isn't the worst cost. But if you're into that, July 31st is when you can get it in the US and Canada. They also, like, if you think $70 is too much for a controller, they also announced a matching charging stand for it that is $50. Yeah, nope, not buying a $50 play and charge kit with a fancy stand. Not happening.
I guess I just have to wonder, when do you get to the point where you're like, okay, enough with the special edition controllers? I have a hard time believing that they sell enough of these that it makes sense for them to continue to come out with one or more every couple of months. We talked about the accessible controller not maybe having a large enough audience to be in retailers everywhere. And yet, how many custom controllers do they have now?
People like these things. Yeah, I frequently on Reddit see people posting pictures where they've got 5, 6, 7, 8 different controllers that are all different. So, and these controllers don't last forever. So if you've got a broken controller and you need to replace it, then why not pick a cool looking one? I guess.
Yeah, I suppose.
And if you're taking them with you to work or to a friend's house, then if you've got a special edition one, then you're not going to get it confused with your friends and that sort of stuff. Maybe. I don't know. Paul is in the chat. Paul really wants us to talk about Sea of Thieves updates. I don't have anything to say about Sea of Thieves updates. Sorry, Paul. He's asking about the...
well, don't leave it there. I mean, it's because we're just not really all that familiar with what's going on there right now, right?
Well, no. And we also just, we don't tend to talk that much about specific game things that are happening. You know, we only really talk about super specific games during E3 and stuff like that. So, yes, Sea of Thieves was a big thing when it came out, and it's yet another new IP. See, but I don't think they're doing enough big new things to really warrant talking about the updates. So, and then Paul links to the Sea of Thieves special edition controller. I love you, Paul.
Bringing it together. I like that.
Right. That's perfect. He does ask an interesting question. I've seen other people ask about this before. Why doesn't Xbox have a single earpiece wireless mic? I think my original Xbox One came with one, and it was awful.
It wireless was or so, wired? I thought it was wired.
He did say wireless. It was wired.
That's wired. And that was a piece of crap. I mean, that was one of those things that cost them less than $1 to make, and they threw it in the box with your console.
Yeah, so he means something a little bit more like a Bluetooth headset sort of thing. Yeah, I've seen people wish that that existed, but there just must not be enough demand. That's the only reason I can think of. It's not something I'm looking for. I really like the stereo headsets, but there seem to be some, just apparently not enough people looking for something like that. All right, let's jump into this week's Deals with Gold and Spotlight Sale. It won't take long because it's yet again another kind of crappy week for Deals with Gold. There's only one game I want to point out, and that is Child of Light. It's another one of those single-player narrative-driven games for Robert. He'll love it. It is a role-playing game. I loved this game when it came out. It was new IP also when it came out from Ubisoft. And it is only $4.50. This is a role-playing game that's not super challenging and can actually be played with your children. It's kind of the idea. The protagonist is a probably 10-ish-year-old girl who has to fight back through this interesting land. It's a cool game. It's a cool story. Check it out if you're into role-playing games. Basically, it's not super long. You're not looking at a 70-hour game here. It's probably 15 hours.
Did you guys play this on Story Players? I don't remember.
Child of Light, no, because this game came out 2014 or 2015.
Oh, okay.
It's been out for a while. Yeah, so no. And then, so that's it. That's all I'm recommending. And last week, I kind of feel bad, because last week I told our listeners, if you've been waiting for something, maybe hold off, because there's probably a huge summer sale coming again, because they normally do one in July. But man, if they didn't, you know, they had one of those Inside Xbox events today. That's where they announced that crazy new controller and stuff like that. They didn't announce another game sale. So, I mean, it's already July 10th. If they're not announcing another summer game sale, they're either not doing another one, or here's one last sliver of hope for our listeners. Maybe, and I don't know if this would actually make sense, but maybe they're waiting for the PlayStation summer game sale to be over, which has another week left on it. I think that goes through July 17th. So I don't know if that actually makes sense, but that's maybe your only other hope of them doing a summer game sale, unless they just decide to do it completely differently than they've done it the last few years.
All right. Why don't I cover the games with gold to get us through this? So, you know, of course, I've downloaded all of these, even though I'm never gonna, well, anyway. So we have about 3 days left for you to catch Smite Gold Bundle for Xbox One. We also have the rest of the month of July for Assault Android Cactus for the Xbox One. And then starting next week, you'll be able to get Death Squared Co-op Puzzler. I think that's your note that this is a co-op puzzler.
Yep.
For the Xbox One. And then on Xbox 360, you have about 2 or 3 days left to get Virtua Fighter 5 Final Showdown. And at the latter half of the month, because they do this differently for Xbox, through the end of July, starting next week, you'll be able to get Splinter Cell Conviction for Xbox 360. That's it for Games with Gold. And that wraps up our topics. But we have some other Microsoft news, because we can't let the week go by without talking about the news of the new Surface Go. Josh, you and I had very different reactions to this.
I don't know that that's entirely true. I don't think it's entirely true. So let's rattle off what it is super quick. There's, I think, basically two models of this. It is a smaller Surface. It's meant to slot in below the Surface Pro. That's why it's called the Surface Go. We'll get into the name in a little bit. It starts at $400 with 4 gigs of RAM and 64 gigs of probably slower than crap eMMC storage. And it's got a Pentium Gold processor, which frankly, I know very little about.
Pentium?
Pentium. Yep. Intel has so many processor lines now. There's Atom. And then I think next is Pentium. And then the Core i stuff.
So I just didn't know that Pentium still existed.
Mm-hmm. Sure does. Yeah, it's kind of like their budget line below the Core i processors, but better than the Atom processors. So
all right.
That's that. They also have a better, like if you're going to buy a Surface Go, this is the one you should buy. It has 8 gigs of RAM and 128 gig of SSD, but I think they also are doing a 256 gig version. I don't, doesn't matter. This also has USB-C for charging and all of that other USB stuff, but it still has a Surface connector. So you can use Surface connector power adapters and the Surface connector docking station and all that stuff. Again, starts at $400. There's a new type cover, a $100 version, $130 version with the different colors in the Alcantara fabric and all that
stuff.
How
have they not brought the price of that down? $100 for that is ridiculous.
Yeah, and it doesn't come with a Surface Pen. That's $100 extra if you want the pen. So that's what it is. It's called the Go. Where do you want to start with this, Richard?
All right, well, I'm going to crank my volume down because I think I just totally blew everybody's ears out with my last exclamation. So as I understand this, I think they're trying to make a play yet again for the market that the iPad currently dominates. The problem is that the iPad is now available in a $299 model. Their starting point is already $100 cheaper. So I don't honestly know how this competes. Now, I don't know anything about this processor. You know, I'm surprised that Pentium is still around. And if this is, you know, it's got to be better than Atom, right? It's got to be.
Yeah.
Does this, you suppose, mean that the Surface line of Surface 1, 2, 3, 4, or Surface and Surface 2, 3, and 4, that goes away? Now we have Surface Go and Surface Pro?
I think so.
Okay. And they're bringing it in at a lower price, which is good. I just have a hard time believing is not the word. I have a hard time understanding why they're doing this again.
Well, I think that this will appeal to some people. Like, if you're looking for a nice but lower cost Windows tablet / 2-in-1 sort of thing, this will work for you. Do not get the base model option. That eMMC storage is going to be slow and you will notice, and it will never be good. Do not get that version. Get it with the SSD. Seriously, it really, really, really matters. Do not get it with the MMC storage. I have a Surface 3. I know what that's like. It's terrible.
Right. I have that same Surface 3. And
yeah.
I bought it because it was on a crazy sale for less than this.
Right.
But it's still unusable as a daily driver. I only use it for testing.
Yeah. So this would be fine for a lot of people. It would be fine for kids. Like, I would use this device. I would very much consider replacing my Surface 3 with this as my, like, general note-taking tablet and stuff like that. But it's just too expensive for that. The price, I think, is still just too much for what it is. And maybe I would feel differently if I wanted to use it more as a laptop, but I don't. And Windows devices as tablets, not really great as tablets because they don't have the apps that iPads and Android tablets have.
Right. And they've eliminated a lot of the user interface stuff that made them work really well as tablets. You know, when they came up with this more melded interface, I still argue, if you will, that they got rid of a lot of the goodness of Windows 8 that made Windows 8 a good tablet operating system. So, yeah, I'm frustrated by this. I thought that you were actually a little bit more positive about this than you seem to be. You know, the one thing that you said about kids being a possible target for this, Amazon just throws that in the trash, right? Because you can get a Fire tablet for under $100.
Well, but I don't mean for kids as a tablet. I really mean for kids as like a laptop slash two in one. So old, I don't mean my 5-year-old. I mean more like my 10-year-old.
Okay. All right.
The kids that you're thinking of getting a Chromebook for, then maybe this, if you want them to be in the Windows ecosystem, if you want them using Office instead of Google Docs, then this might make sense for you.
Okay, but maybe. I would argue maybe, because you can still, on a Chromebook, get access to the live.com, still live.com for some reason, apps that would allow you to use all that stuff online. The pricing is comparable. You know, these aren't, once you load it up with decent specs, cheaper than Chromebooks.
No, they're not cheaper than Chromebooks, and that's part of the problem. And as LA Sooner points out in the chat, a lot of Chromebooks now run Android apps, and you can run Word as an Android app. So,
oh, wow. I didn't even think about that. I'm thinking online. But yeah. Wow.
Yep. Yeah. So it is harder to recommend this, but I think that there are some people that this could make sense for. And there are some businesses, I think, that this might make sense for, you know, because businesses still primarily want Windows-based devices. I just don't think that this is going to come in as some iPad killer, and in a lot of cases, probably won't be the Chromebook killer that they're hoping for. But I think that has more to do with the price, because I would probably more strongly consider getting my 10-year-old a $200 Chromebook than a $550 Surface Go.
Right. And, you know, your comment about maybe businesses would use this, I don't know. I feel like most of the stuff that people are doing nowadays is through web applications, that the idea of Windows specific and Windows only applications that would work well on a tablet, I think that market is really, really small.
Right.
I think if anything, people are migrating, or companies are migrating, to web-based systems that need connectivity, but they can be used on a browser on any tablet.
Yeah, I think the pen is the main, and that's been the case for me. The pen is the main differentiator for me. The reason I have a Surface 3 is because it goes with me to every single meeting, because I would rather take notes on a tablet with a pen. I think it's less distracting, less, you know, I don't like having that laptop screen in between me and another person. I think that's kind of rude and distracting. It's also so slow that I can't possibly multitask in a meeting. So that's maybe kind of a good thing. it also works really well for me as my music display thing when I'm playing guitar, but that's super niche. But there are a lot of business use cases for the pen stuff that you just don't get with a lot of these other types of tablets.
I agree, except that the $299 tablet that Apple announced earlier this year does work with the Apple Pencil. So you, for $100 less at the base entry point,
right,
still have an alternative if you don't care about the ecosystem, if you just need a tablet for doing stuff. But yeah, so we'll see how this goes. I mean, it's interesting. I was genuinely surprised to see that they were doing this. And if this is what everybody has been talking about as the lower priced, smaller tablet that they're coming out with, this is a far cry from the Surface Mini that people were thinking of.
Right. Yeah. This would be different if it was $300, but it's not.
Yep. All right. Well, that is it for our news. So let's jump into what's going on in our entertainment centers. And for me, I'm going to start with an update that I was very excited about a couple of months ago when I read about it and then consequently wrote about it. And that was an update that Onkyo was going to put out for their AV receivers that would allow them to be works with Sonos compatible. And this seemed really cool. And I was excited about it because I have a Pioneer Elite receiver, which is an Onkyo product, and I was supposed to get the update, and I got the update. And guess what? This doesn't do what we thought it would do. This does not make your Onkyo or Pioneer Elite receiver a Sonos node. What this does is it allows it to work better with a Sonos Connect, which is a completely separate $350 product that essentially allows you to make any speaker or any output a Sonos-driven device. So I really don't understand the point. As best I can tell, the only thing that this really does is it fixes the problem that I was experiencing, because I've had my Kinect hooked up to my Pioneer Elite AV receiver to be able to pump Sonos stuff into it and through my speaker system in my family room. And I noticed that there was a tiny lag between it and the actual Sonos system. So I think what this probably does is it ensures that it will sync up perfectly with your other Sonos devices, which is wonderful. But then why didn't they say that? Why didn't they include that in their press release? Instead, they made it seem like it was going to be, this capability was going to be built in. And I'm very, very disappointed by it. So I've reached out to them on Twitter, and I'm going to be reaching out to them through their press channels for a little bit more information, because I want to make sure that we report this correctly. We reported this incorrectly based on the limited amount of information that they made available initially.
Right. Yeah. That's really unfortunate.
All right. On the TV front, I have been watching the usual stuff. I've been watching Big Brother. I have been trying to catch up on Arrow and on The Flash. And I have almost finished Designated Survivor. And I say finished because if you didn't know already, Survivor has been canceled. So this second season was the last. I have one episode to go, and then that'll be it for that. And this past week, we watched the first of four installments of the Howard's End miniseries that Starz did. If you saw the original Howard's End movie, wow, maybe like 20 years ago now, I think it was. Maybe more than that.
I've never even heard of this, Richard.
Oh, are you kidding me?
No.
This is a classic E.M. Forrester novel. And it is, I think, it won Best Cinematography the year that it was out. And it is just beautiful. It is a stunningly beautiful film. And it's a classic. This is a typical story for E.M. Forrester. But it was a movie I always enjoyed, and I'm surprised that they're making it into a miniseries 20 years later. It stars Haley Atwell, better known in some circles as Agent Carter, an actress that I really like quite a lot. And so I wanted to see what it was like. And it's pretty good, actually. I'm only through the first of the 4-hour-long installments, but I really like it. It's very true to the story, very true to the novel. And so I'm looking forward to the rest of it. So that's something we picked up and we'll definitely follow through on. And that's it. That's all I have been watching in the last week because, you know, holidays and weekends and stuff. Josh, what have you been up to?
Well, I real quick wanted to toss in here that Paul says, Richard, because of you, they're finishing up what I might call the ultimate binge fest of New Girl. You suggested it a while ago. They started it last week. They're on episode 8 of season 6 already.
Wow.
That is binging. Wow.
That is a serious binge.
Paul, yes. Have you seen the sun in the last week? you might need to go outside a little bit. Holy crap. Anyway, as for me, no TV watching with holiday and stuff. It was a lot of barbecues and various other things and lots of driving this weekend too. But a little bit of game playing. Played The Awesome Adventures of Captain Spirit. I think I mentioned this last week. We played this as another episode of Story Players that released today. This is the free game that came out from Don't Nod. They're the company that made Life is Strange. Everyone knows how much I love Life is Strange. It's kind of like a demo for the upcoming Life is Strange Season 2. Same universe, probably different characters, but it's free. It's an hour and a half long or so, available on Xbox, PC, and PlayStation. Check it out if you're into that sort of thing. And then I also restarted playing Horizon Zero Dawn. Now that I've, you know, I finished Detroit, Become Human and stuff like that, I was looking for another big new, you know, single player narrative driven game just for Robert. So went back to Horizon Zero Dawn, and I really, really like that game. I kind of wish I wouldn't have dropped it when I did, but we had to play Final Fantasy 15 instead. So now I'm back to that, and unfortunately, it's PlayStation exclusive, so there is that, but still a good game nonetheless.
Cool.
Yeah, so that is going to do it for this episode. If you want to get a hold of us, just go to the website, digitalmediazone.com. You can find all of our contact information, but I do like Twitter a lot. So Richard's on Twitter, at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard, and the website is at DigiMediaZone. Richard, you and I both have other podcasts. I mentioned Story Players. We just did one for The Awesome Adventures of Captain Spirit. And the week before, we did one for Detroit Become Human. What's going on with Home On?
Home On will be out shortly, believe it or not. I know sometimes you have to wonder. But in the meantime, I want to promote our summer giveaway because we only have a couple of entries for this. And I'm really excited about this giveaway. We are offering a free Insteon hub. I'm going to call it the Hub 2 because it's the square one, the more recent version of the hub that's been out. And that is going to be available to the person who provides us with the best digital assistant fail story. We want to hear your stories about how you have used and had unexpected or completely poor results from your request to your digital assistant. So send those in to us. Josh and I will judge them at the end of July, and the person with the best story will get a new Insteon hub.
Very cool. Very cool. Looking forward to reading all of those stories. That's going to be a lot of fun. Well, another thing that's a lot of fun is doing this show live with all of you in the chat room tonight. We had a nice group of people in the chat room tonight. You heard us mentioning them. You could be a part of it too. Just come to our website, thedigitalmediazone.com, on Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Usually, we always tweet about when the show is going to be live, but that's generally when it is. And you can chat along with us while we're doing the show. That's going to do it for episode 452. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.